Part of the ongoing stigma attached to mental illness is the societal belief that people should behave certain ways, and when they don't, it doesn't make sense to the observers. It is just plain hard to be a person close to a person suffering from mental illness, which is why people who know something about those situations offer help from people who've been through similar situations. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, offers a family-to-family training program. Sessions start up soon with the NAMI Southern Oregon chapter, and two of the trainers join me here in the studio. Pam Ames, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
And Sherry Morgan is here as well. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
So tell us a bit first about NAMI and the general workings of NAMI and how it is structured to help people.
NAMI's a national organization that was started by family members who were extraordinarily frustrated with their inability to deal both with their family members and with the virtually non-existent mental health system or mental health delivery system. So they developed, or a woman by the name of Joyce Berland, who is herself a psychiatric nurse, I believe, and is now in her either late 70s or early 80s, wrote the family-to-family class materials for family members to be trained to teach other family members how to cope with their mentally ill family. The organization sort of started with that flagship class and has burgeoned. We now have 7 or 8 different class offerings and support groups and trainings that are meant to target not just family members now, but also the people living with mental illness. So we've grown a lot in our mission and also in our membership and in our impact nationally. I think NAMI is, while not exactly a household name, it is still in circles that deal with mental illness at all. It is a known entity. So I think we can be proud of that.
You talked about the virtually non-existent mental health system. Has it improved at all in the time that you've been part of NAMI?
Tremendously. Well, since I've been part of NAMI, sometimes yes and sometimes no. It depends on budget cuts at the state and national level and even at the local level. But as a whole, from the inception of NAMI to now, there's been huge improvements. Now, since I've been a member, which has been about 14, 15 years, I would say the local police are much better trained in how to handle mental illness. Not all of that training has taken, quote unquote, but at least it's been given, offered, and required for local police.
That becomes one of the issues, though, isn't it, for dealing with mental illness in our society, is that police are often the first people who are in a position to respond and don't generally know much about what they're responding to.
But NAMI has been part of the training for, they call it crisis intervention training, and we've been part of designing that training for first responders like police and sometimes paramedics and those kinds of people who might come on a scene where someone is in a crisis and know how to handle that by not escalating it and instead being able to recognize the signs that this person might be involved in some kind of a breakdown, mental illness breakdown, and then they're able to treat that person in a different way than they would, say, someone who is in the midst of committing a crime or something like that.
Sherry Morgan, is one of the issues for people who are dealing with mental illness in the family just recognizing what they're dealing with in the first place? I would think that would be a big first step.
That is a big first step. It's a big first step not only for the family but for the person who is directly involved, the mentally ill person. One of the characteristics of mental illness is sort of a lack of self-awareness about the fact that you might be having some kind of mental illness. And so for family members, I think it's really difficult to come to grips with the concept that their loved one is mentally ill. And then finding services, finding resources to help deal with that, that's difficult. So that's one of the things that NAMI wants to help with. We have support groups. We have this family-to-family class and other entities out in the community, Jackson County Mental Health and so forth, are beginning to put into place some better supports too and some intermediate places between going to, say, a psychiatric care facility and just not being able to do anything about it. So, yeah, finding the resources and recognizing it for what it is really the first step.
Mental illness is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking in particular about family-to-family training offered by NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Sherry Morgan, you just heard, and Pam Ames are both members of NAMI and trainers as well on a program coming up starting, what's the date on the Rogue Valley?
February 9th.
February 9th is when it starts a free 12-week course. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the issues involved here, 800-838-3760. Anywhere in our listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Steve in Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Howdy. I'm no psychiatrist, but I am enough of a informed amateur, I think, to sort of connect some dots. And it seems that many people undergoing treatment for schizophrenia are given drugs and end up in some kind of a fog or a haze that they absolutely detest and go off the drugs and go back to the schizophrenia. I know some people that I would call feral crazies. They're homeless by choice. They don't want no stinking treatment. They just want...
Are we seeing to have lost...
Do you have the right to be crazy? I mean,
let's try to reduce this to mental illness and not the term crazy. Yeah. I'm sure that offends a few people.
Yeah. Well, some madness is divine sense.
All right. So
to the discerning eye. Emily Dickinson said that long ago. And do you have the right to be mad or mentally challenged or whatever politically correct tag you want to put on it? Or is there some committee out there that says, no, you're straight dangerous and handled with a chain? I mean, if you're not hurting anyone and you're only doing whatever you're doing to yourself, don't you have the right to do that?
Let us find out. Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate that. So first issue was people not taking medication. Is that a fairly common occurrence?
Oh, yes. And the reason this caller quoted, and thank you, Steve, for your concern, because your question raises a huge issue that has been alive and kicking for decades. As you probably know, there are groups that call themselves psychiatric survivors, meaning survivors of treatment, which are actively encouraging people not to take medications such as the ones you were talking about. We in NAMI, let me backtrack a moment. NAMI started out supported largely by monies from the pharmaceutical companies. When the laws changed, requiring pharmaceutical companies to be more transparent with where they gave monies, why, and how, we began receiving a lot less monies from pharmaceuticals. At that point, we became a bit freer, and I can't say that we were heavily constrained by those pharmaceutical funds, but we became a bit freer to speak of other options besides taking psychoactive meds, which, as you say, do put people in a fog. And do people have a right to be mentally ill and on the street and homeless? I would say, speaking for the society at large, no. I think the attitude is such that no, people do not have that right. My personal attitude is that it's a very fine line we have to walk as individuals and as a society between forcing people to take medication and not be mad, as you put it, and allowing people to be homeless and possibly dangerous to themselves and others. That's not always the case, as I'm sure you know, but I don't think there's any easy answer for that.
Sherry?
We do in the class give information about the kinds of psychoactive drugs that are out there. We don't promote any particular regimen. That's up to the person and the family at some point and their psychiatrist or their therapist. There are options. There are other options besides getting into treatment with drugs. I have to say that my family member, she said I could say this on the air, my daughter, who has bipolar disorder, does take lithium. At one point, she was taking a whole lot more drugs, and that was not a good thing. And she gradually has been weaned off of some of those other psychoactive drugs, and she's just taking lithium, and she is much better for that. So it's individual. It's such an individual thing. And for some people, to get started taking any kind of medication that might alter their thinking processes, their brain processes, that's a huge step. And it's really something that has to be done with very fine tuning. And there has to be a level of buy-in. So in terms of rights or wrongs, I think we have to look at protecting individuals and society, but also not jumping in with both feet in terms of a heavy-handed treatment.
Well, the approach has certainly changed over the years. We no longer put people in gigantic warehouses.
That's
or state
right.
hospitals and the sort. Sherry Morgan and Pam Ames, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, members of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Southern Oregon chapter, which will be offering a family-to-family training program coming up soon. Your questions and comments are welcome at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. JX at jeffnet.org is our email address, and you can check out pictures of Sherry and Pam on Facebook. They weren't really pleased to have a camera in front of them first thing in the morning, but this is what happens. So if it's a 12-week course, I mean, how many hours each week along the way?
Two and a half hours per mm-hmm. class.
All right, so it's a 25-hour class then.
It's a big commitment, mm-hmm. and both students and teachers get a little weary by the end of that time, but it is a well worthwhile commitment to make for your family members and also for the people who are not living with mental illness. It really helps restore some sanity to family members who are dealing with people living with mental illness. I don't know. Sherry, take it away.
each of the trainers, both Pam and I and other people who do training in the Valley, have all taken this class as well because we all have family members who are in this situation. And I think many other things, if you don't have a connection with other people who are going through the same situation, you feel kind of like the Lone Ranger out there. And it is very helpful to people, I think, not only to get the information, which is really not there's a lot of information. That's really not the point. The point is to sort of get a better insight into the experience that your mentally ill family member is going through, some kind of emotional connection, better communication skills, all of those things. Plus the experience of sitting in the same room and talking and getting to know other families who are also dealing with this issue. And I think that support is very important for families.
It sounds like the support is one element of it, but the other part of it is that it is hard to know where to turn for resources in our society.
Indeed. Indeed.
Resources have, as I said earlier, dwindled and built up. And right now we're in a building up stage because the economy is getting a little better. The budget is a little better for mental health
delivery. So social
services
improve. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But it seems that mental health services are one of the first things to be cut when the budget cuts come along with education. In any case, Jackson County's making a real effort to put preventive measures in place to cooperate with some of the other nonprofit organizations in the Valley. Outfits like Access and On Track and Youth Move, there are cooperative programs that were put into place recently with JCMH that will help with that. There are jail diversion programs. There's now a drop-in center, an active drop-in center, both for adults, which is run on the it's called Compass House. It's on West 6th Street in Medford.
What's a good starting place for anybody in any community to call? I mean, should they start by looking for NAMI, or should they start by looking at county mental health? I mean, what's if they're looking for help with the situation?
I think the county mental health crisis line is probably the best place to start. NAMI can always give out those numbers, but if you have those numbers in the first place, I would call them first. NAMI does not deliver mental health services. They only refer people to mental health services. So call the mental health providers first.
And so if it's a 25-hour class, where is the, and it starts February 9th, we said, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where does it all take place?
We're at the Smullen Center, which is on the Rogue Valley Medical Center campus, just off of Barnett Road in Medford. It's the first left as you get up toward the hospital if you're coming from the freeway on Barnett Road. And 6:30 to 9 o'clock at night. We have to say right now, I think we should say, that the class that is starting in February is quite full. We still may have a few more spaces, but not a lot. So way back when we started talking to you about this, Jeffrey, I think we only had 7, but now we're up to 20, and that's quite a little bit. So we would still be interested, and people can get on a wait list. We try to do this twice a year. We try to do one in the spring, one in the fall. So if people aren't ready to take this class now, to schedule it into their schedule, it's kind of late in the day to do that. We may have another one in the fall. We'll certainly have another one in the spring next year.
Okay, NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and it is the Family to Family program, and Sherry Morgan and Pam Ames are trainers and members. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome.